I'm starting to realize those aliens from Mars Attack, are they the ones with like the giant brains and the huge eyes?
Oh my God, yes. Which, like,
Okay.
yeah, completely.
I
They're kind of creepy, right?
they
But,
really
like,
are.
yeah.
They are. I've never seen the movie, but I know exactly what you're. I don't know
Yeah,
where or
the
why
eyes
I
were,
would have
I
seen
mean, the
them.
CGI was really bad. They like splattered like jelly and stuff. And I mean,
Yeah.
I was like a kid. I feel like I was better being creeped
Right.
out.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Try Reading Podcast. I am your book nerd host, Gabriel, and whether this is the first episode you listen to or the 55th, I am so glad you're here. But enough of my talking, it's time to introduce the guest. Today I'm joined by the debut author, Wenyi Li. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I mean,
Of
we were just talking about the fact that we are in very different time zones and very different ends of the world right now. So it's always exciting to get to talk to you.
Yes, I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, for anyone listening, Wenyi is 16 hours ahead of me. And so, but I am so excited to be up at midnight for this. This is like waiting for an exciting book release or something. So, I could not be more excited. And I'm just so honored to have you on the podcast. And I can't wait to learn more about you and your book.
I'm so excited to talk to you.
Well, I'm so glad. And listeners, if you don't know who Wenyi Li is, let me tell you. Wenyi Li is a Clarion West Workshop alum. Her short fiction has appeared in Lightspeed, Uncanny, Strange Horizons, and Nightmare, among others, as well as anthologies including Amplitudes, Stories of Queer and Transfurity, and Southeast Asian speculative collection Fish Eats Lion Redux. She has written, edited, and mentored speculative work in venues including Tor.com, Apparition Lit, Author Mentor Match, National Gallery Singapore, and a National Future Thinking Project. She is a graduate of University College London, where she spent too much time in the theater, which personally, there's no such thing, and is now based back home in Singapore, where she likes writing about girls with bite, feral nature, and ghosts. Her debut novel, The Dark We Know, is set to release through Gillian Flynn Books on August 13th, 2024, and it is a YA horror inspired by Spring Awakening. And from that alone, I am sold. I couldn't be more
Thank
excited for this book, and I
you
am
so
so
much.
excited that I get the pleasure of talking with you today. And so, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I mean, fun fact that I learned about in the process of selling and then like publishing this book, it's Gillian Flynn, which I'd
Oh.
gotten wrong my entire life. Not on you, because I still say it wrong. Like, I'm gonna have to like say it like 3 times in a row before I do like any events with her or anything. Fingers crossed. But
Yeah.
yeah, Gillian Flynn, amazingly.
Oh, thank you. That's good to know.
Yeah, weird, always weird hearing myself introduced.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're just gonna be able to get more and more used to it because as time gets closer and closer to the book release, I can only imagine there's gonna be more events and more panels
Yeah,
and yeah.
still working on the pitch for the book every time. I mean, we've just been in like Lunar New Year over here, and like
Right.
people are starting to like talk about the book, obviously. So people are coming up to me and being like, "Oh, so what is your book about?" And then I always just like freeze. So I'm still working on that pitch, and I probably should start getting it right at some point.
Yeah, well, you'll be able to practice it in a couple of questions. So
Yeah,
this can be your sort of
fingers
like
crossed. I did
guinea
right. Yeah,
pig. Yeah.
fingers crossed.
Well, I always start the podcast by asking, what are you currently reading?
I always try to have like a couple different books in like different formats at any one time, because I want to have like either depending on what I'm doing, like if I'm commuting or if like I'm doing chores, I like to have something in a different format, just to keep me going. So
Yeah.
on my Kindle now, I'm reading The Oleander Sword, which is the sequel to The Jasmine Throne by Tasha Suri. Epic South Asian inspired fantasy, feral sapphics, which is very relevant to the book that I'm working on now for After the Dark We Know, which I'm very excited about. Can't talk about yet, but hopefully soon. So that's been great. I've always been looking for, more like more Asian fantasy, more sapphic fantasy. So that's really cool. I'm really enjoying that. I finally got around to it after the whole like sapphic trifecta thing, in like 2021. And then on audio, I'm reading Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross, like everyone else in the YA world. It's great. I mean, Audiobooks, I have this thing with audiobooks where my like audio attention span is really bad, so I can't read anything that requires like too much brain power. So like a light fantasy with like that's very romance driven, very like vibes, very about the character relationships, it's perfect. I'm having a lot of fun. I can see why people are so obsessed with it. So
Yeah.
yeah, that's what I'm reading now.
That's great. I have heard wonderful things about both of those books, and yeah, it's so true, the sapphic trifecta of 2020, and then to yeah, just to have just in general more queer representation. But like on the last episode, I was talking with an author of a sapphic, her debut as a sapphic love story, and she was just saying like, for her, it was very weird to sort of break into that space because there's not a lot, and we want there to be because it's so important to have that representation. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
so it's wonderful for you to be sharing it, but also for you to be writing it too and
Yeah, I
bringing
mean,
it into the world.
I think now we're in like a really cool time where we are starting to see more like queer rep, in books, more sapphic rep. I personally would love to see more BIPOC sapphic rep. I think that's
Yes.
always the next step. It's always you get a lot of sort of the white queer representation, and that's obviously great, and that always sort of like start the ball rolling. But I would love to see more BIPOC sapphic rep, and I think we are like slowly getting there. So I'm very excited to be there, and so very honored to be part of it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am currently reading The Prospects by K.T. Hoffman. I was really honored to be sent an ARC from the Dial Press, and K.T.'s debut comes out April 9th, if I'm remembering correctly. So it's an ARC, but I'm really excited to be reading it early. It's a trans romance, and it's, from what I was actually reading about, one of the first trans main characters, trans gay main characters written by a trans gay author, published by a major publishing house, which is really
Oh,
cool.
cool.
And
I'll have to check it out.
it's,
Yeah.
yeah, and so it's a sports romance. It's a minor league baseball team and it's rivals to lovers. And it's just super fun and exciting, but also really important for the publishing world and for presentation. But I'm loving it so far. It's super fun. And yeah, it's a book
Yeah.
I was highly anticipating. So I'm very excited to be reading it early. And for anyone who's interested, who's listening, you can read The Prospects by K.T. Hoffman on April 9th.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we talk so much about queer rep as an umbrella that we sort of sometimes forget that like different queer communities, even sort of within that community, are more or less represented than others. And I think trans gay rep, especially written by an author who shares those identities, is a really important step. And I think we sort of overlook that sometimes when we count statistics.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have just a couple honorable mentions, which are just like shout outs from previous podcast guests who have releases. And so the first is A Letter in the Wall by Eileen Brill, which has just recently released in audiobook format. And so, listeners, if you want to listen to an incredibly fascinating historical thriller, you can check out the amazing audiobook of A Letter in the Wall. On March 5th, the graphic novel adaptation of Evil Spy School by Stuart Gibbs releases. On March 12th, Nelson and McElwraith Book 2 by The Marvelous K. Stirling comes out. And Nelson and McElwraith Book 3 comes out just a week later on March 20th. These are the final two books in the fabulous supernatural romantic thriller trilogy. And last is a shout out to a publisher who had sent book mail to me, so I'd like to just give that shout out. But a big thank you to Forever Publishing for an ARC of Second Night Stand by Corellia and Faye Stutz Waters, the wife duo behind this fabulous debut. It's a vibrant and lively sapphic rom-com between a burlesque dancer and a prima ballet dancer. And so my year is booked and busy with romance. So a big shout out to the
As
publisher,
it
and I'm
should
very
be.
excited to read it. Yeah, but my first official question for you is, have you always loved books and reading?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was always the really annoying kid who would like go to library, and like spend a couple hours like browsing the shelves, and then like walk out with like my library card like maxed out, like 12 or 24 books. I think we had this thing where like like during the school holidays, our like library card quota would like double because they wanted to like encourage you to read during the holidays. So I would just like go wild. And I would go in there, walk out with a stack of books and like be done with it for the next time my parents brought me to the library. So I was definitely always like the really annoying, like that was like my formative like identity as a child. I was like reading, I was writing. I think it definitely like dipped as I got into like, you know, I got busy with school, I got busy with everything else going on in my life, and then I sort of like refound it during the pandemic with like getting back into writing, getting back into wanting to get published and like finding a reading community, which I think has been so impactful in terms of like encouraging me to read and like helping me find new books to read and like exciting me to read and also to spend way too much money buying books. But that's a different thing. But yeah, I've always been sort of that person. I think all my classmates growing up sort of knew me as like the writer. I would like write like this like pre like computer or like early computer days, I guess. I was like write like handwriting on my notebooks, and that's I still handwrite a lot. I think I grew up with that habit and it helps me like get over writer's block. But I would like write in notebooks. I was like a Wattpad girly. All the usual like milestones, like I was there, like it's always been a part of my life, even though it sort of fluctuated at different times. Yeah.
Yeah, but you had these very like monumental and iconic pieces of time, the library, like you said, Wattpad or writing in your notebooks and
No one try and find me on Wattpad.
that
I think I deactivated it. I hope I did. I don't think my real name's on this, so I don't think you'll find it, but yeah, that was me when I was like 14.
And it all sort of led up to where you are now, and it all was a part of this process and journey. But it's so cool to know that it was there from such a young age. And even though you said it sort of, fluctuated, that you found that love for reading and writing again, now you get to publish these stories.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And I think I mean it's always weird to like be grateful for COVID, but I think what happened with a lot of people and not just me, like so many of my like author friends, so many people in like I mean book Twitter and like book talk like blew up during COVID, like so many things. So many like people found like artistic hobbies and like got into these hobbies because of, you know, we all had the time. And so I do really think that that time like sort of changed everything in terms of getting me back into it and like leading me into finding these communities and spaces and interests again. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you had this immense love for reading as a young kid, but did you always love horror?
Oh, that's I feel like that's the controversial question. So I always feel bad saying no because I mean even now like but like I grew up as like a complete like scaredy cat. I was so bad with like horror movies. I read like I think my like threshold was probably like I read like Roald Dahl's like adult stuff, which is kind of like macabre and dark. But it isn't always like, you know, it's not like horror. But I would not like watch horror movies. I think my imagination was just like way too active. So I would just like see things in the dark. Like I could not deal with horror movies. Like my parents always make fun of me because when I was a kid, I was really scared of this of the aliens in this like movie called Mars Attacks. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I
I
don't
don't know
think
if you've
so.
seen it. You can look up the aliens from Mars Attacks. And when I tell you I was apparently terrified of these things, you will understand why I say I was not a horror person growing up. Like they look so bad, they're like kind of creepy, but like there's no reason why I should have been terrified of them. But anyway, I didn't really grow up a horror person, which is kind of weird, in the fact that my book sort of ended up being like classified as horror. It didn't start out as horror, and then it just everyone said it was horror, so I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm writing horror now. I think that says something about the state of my brain, of like what I was producing, even though I wasn't drawing directly from horror influences. But I think after like people were like, this is horror, I sort of got more into YA horror. I looked up, you know, I was looking for like comp titles when I was querying, and I was finding like horrors and like dark, like supernatural stuff. So I definitely started learning more, and like consuming more of the genre and like finding out what I liked and like where I position myself in it. And I think I came to like really appreciate horror as a genre and like what it can do, and the stories that you can use the medium for. in terms of, exploring really heightened emotions, using it as a metaphor or a lens for like social issues or cultural issues or fears. I think it's really powerful, and I really appreciate horror as a genre. Even if I'm like still, I like horror books a lot. I like horror like writing. I'm still kind of scared of like horror, like visuals and like horror movies. Like, I think that's when my imagination, like if you put in the music and you put in the visuals, that's when my imagination starts going. Yeah. So if I do watch it, it's like in the daylight with like the volume like control in my hand. Just yeah, with all the stops. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, first of all, I'm starting to realize those aliens from Mars Attack, are they the ones with like the giant brains and the huge eyes?
Oh my God, yes. With like, yeah.
Okay.
They're kind of creepy, right?
They
But
really
like,
are.
yeah.
They are. I've never seen the movie, but I know exactly what you're. I don't know
Yeah,
where or
the eyes
why I
were,
would have
I mean,
seen
the
them.
CGI was really bad. They like splattered like jelly and stuff. And I mean,
Yeah.
I was like a kid. I feel like I was valid to be creeped
Right.
out.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. But it's very interesting too that like you didn't have this sort of appreciation for horror that you do now, and it was really once people started perceiving your story and really seeing like, oh yeah, this is horror, that you could turn to it in a new way, and especially with writing and reading, and that I cannot do horror movies, anything visually horror, like you said, I
Yeah.
can't. Like the scariest thing I've seen is the A Quiet Place movies, and
Oh, I
that's
haven't
my
seen
limit.
that.
But like I read my first like young adult horror maybe like a year and a half ago now, and I loved it, and it was so
I love
fun.
it.
And it was White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson.
Right.
And I mean, I love
Iconic.
her horror novels, but
Yeah,
then I,
Tiffany is a
yeah,
classic in the Black
right.
White.
And then I sort of turned to see what else I could enjoy and what else I could find. But so it is interesting to have a love for it on the page rather than on the screen. Yeah, I love that you can share these stories now in your words and tell your own horror stories, and maybe it's different too, like when you're the one controlling what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah.
Although, I mean, I have creeped myself out a few times, but I think the cool thing about like getting into a genre is always finding out like how wide a genre really is. Because I mean, growing up, I was like, oh, I'm not a horror person. Like my perception of horror was just like The Exorcist and like a very narrow sense of like what horror is. But I think, like you said, like finding that one book or that one show that like opens you up to a different kind of horror that you're like, oh, maybe I could get into this kind of horror and I could get into this, and this is the kind of thing that I like. It really sort of helps you like open you up to new things and like what the genre can do, and how much you can do within the genre. I think, even just in YA, there's so many people doing so many cool different things, and I really enjoy. I mean, I do like certain types of horror shows. I really like gothic and like character driven kind of stuff. And in books, I think that's also kind of what I'm drawn to. But yeah, I just also think that it's cool that we both sort of started with a specific like sort of set of YA horror books and being like, oh, maybe this is something that I could get
Yeah,
into.
right. Yeah. And I mean, also, like you said, the fact that even you've scared yourself with some of your own writing, that just shows your talent. And
I think it
I
just shows that I have overactive imagination when I'm alone in my house at night, because I'm a night writer, so I tend to write at like 3 a.m.
Oh,
and like
yeah.
everything's dark and the house is like silent, and I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, right?
Right. Well, it seems that you sort of hinted at it earlier, but you've always wanted to be a writer, and is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been writing. I feel like the goal of like being a writer professionally is like one of those things where you're a kid and they're like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're like, oh, I want to be a writer. But like you don't, I never like seriously thought about pursuing it professionally or like looking into the steps on how to get there professionally, until like very recently when I actually started. So I don't know if I always wrote. I guess I was always a writer, but I don't know when I sort of, I don't know how long I would have said that I wanted to be like a professional writer. I think it always felt like a pipe dream. So it's really cool that I sort of ended up here. And I do sort of have to thank, like, I think I was born in the right generation. Like, I found all this information online. I found like all these communities online. Like, I don't think I could have survived like having to do querying by like post. Like you know, like I know like 10, 15, like 15, 20 years ago, they were like sending query letters and getting rejections by post. Like I like sending full scripts by post. Like I'm sorry, I don't, this is like very Gen Z of me to say, but like I don't think I could have done that. I would have just like quit. Like no.
Exactly. No, it's so true. And I can't even imagine. And yeah. And
Like imagine just
yeah.
opening an envelope and like getting the rejection, like all that effort just like at least an email you can just like toss out, but like a
Right.
yeah,
No,
I
it's so true. And you're like, oh gosh, I just sent out all this work and now
know. Right. And like having to
yeah.
like print all the
Right.
manuscripts.
Oh yeah. No, and the cost of postage for sending out here,
Again,
that
like I'm on the other side of the world. Like that was not gonna happen.
exactly. Yeah. Well, you referenced obviously you said you love certain horror books now and but do you have any top like favorite pieces of horror media, whether it's movies, shows,
Yeah.
games, books?
Yeah. So wow, okay. I need to like organize my thoughts. Okay, I'll talk about shows since I feel like I have to like, I was like, I'm not a horror show person, but I do like horror shows. So I will start with the horror shows that I do like. I mean, I feel like this is a very classic choice. But I really like the Haunting anthology on Netflix. I think that is the kind of horror shows that I can take. It's like very character driven, very story driven. You know, it's I don't, I just don't think I can appreciate as much stuff that is just like scary for the sake of being scary. Yeah, I think I just I can't, I don't have the thresholds for that. I do really like religiously like reading horror movie summaries on Wikipedia. So I've read like, of course, like I go down like rabbit holes. So I've read like the summaries of like all the Saw movies
Oh yeah.
on like on Wikipedia, but just because I don't think I would watch it, but like I've read all of them. So I know what happens.
Right.
But I really like The Haunting Anthology, Hill House, Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, the Usher that recently came out was really good. I love like all the gothic stuff. Shows that I've watched recently. I mean, I think Jordan Peele does a great job, obviously. I think I like weird body horror stuff. I'm trying, I there's a lot of things that I want to, I'm really like this, my TBR, I might like to watch this, it's like
Yeah.
terrible. I want to like quote a lot of movies that I want to watch but I haven't actually watched. But I think that also like sort of rings true in the kind of books that I like to read. I like a lot of the character driven, I like sort of literary leaning. I loved Our Wives Under the Sea, which is like sort of more like body horror-ish. I really want to read like Annihilation. I think I'm gonna love that. That's also sort of like eco horror-ish. I in YA horror, I think my sort of like two that I always think about, She is a Haunting by Trang Van Tran. I'm very
Yeah.
biased because Trang and I are very good friends. But I think Trang just did something so special. With like Southeast Asian queer gothic horror. I always tell Trang that like they stole the best title because like half the things I could write could be titled She is the One Thing, but like they stole it first. So I think, you know, if it's been like 10 weeks on the bestseller list, I want to say. And it's, you know, everyone is using it as a comp title now. Completely deserved. I think it did something really special and new in the genre. So She's a Haunting and Andrew Joseph White's works. I'm like, I every time I talk about horror or inspirations or like YA horror, I try not to bring up Andrew Joseph White and fail. I am a Andrew stan. I think Andrew just has like an incredible, like striking voice in YA horror. I'm obsessed with his work all the time. You know, again, like we were talking about like trans gay representation and like trans representation.
Yeah.
And Andrew is such like a like trailblazer in that side of YA horror and that side of YA representation. And it's one of those things where like you get asked about your favorite books and then you've just never read a book in your life. And that's kind of like my brain right now. I'm like, I definitely thought through this before, like when you sent me the questions and now I'm just blanking. But horror games, I think the one that I always really come back to is the series of indie games called the Rusty Lake games. And they're like, they sort of started off as like locked one room, like escape room games, and then they sort of expanded into like a few, like you can pay for like a few more premium, like expanded stories. But what I love about Rusty Lake is that it's this weird, like surreal, like kind of horror series that is sort of about this weird multi-generational family who are involved in like weird like experiments and like reincarnation, and it's a very like surreal like story-driven game that like connects all these games into like one like storyline and one timeline. And I think again, I think that's what I keep coming back to, like that's the kind of horror I really enjoy. Like anything weird, anything surreal, anything like story driven and that like has like really interesting characters. Yeah, I'm really into. I think I love what horror can do for like being evocative and drawing out emotions with these like weird images and sort of using horror and using this imagery as like a metaphor for very real things and you know, evoking very real emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And yeah, like along with just like the subgenres horror can have, but also, yeah, like you said, the different messages, and there's so many different messages and themes it can carry in so many different directions, which is so cool. And using such a, strong medium to convey those messages, and a media that is or a medium that is so loved by so many. But yeah, no, you shared some great shows and books and games and all of those recommendations. And yeah, I love so many of those, and I hope the listeners got some good recommendations. But on the topic of horror, obviously your debut is young adult horror, and
Yeah.
so could you share with the listeners what the book is about, whether you want to give it like your
Here we
elevator pitch or right, here you go. Oh
Yeah. Sorry, what was the second part of that question? I was just too
no, it's
distracted.
okay. Yeah. Just like whether you want it to be like your elevator pitch or however short or long you want to share.
Right. Yeah. yeah, okay. Yeah, so The Dark We Know is a queer YA horror. About an art student who has to return to her haunted hometown for her abusive father's funeral. And she has to reunite with her last surviving childhood friend to confront the evil that killed their friends 2 years ago. So I think like Gabriel said, it is inspired by Spring Awakening. I also think it draws from like, I mean, again, the other person, but like I listened a lot to like Hadestown. I think I was drawing on that on like Taylor Swift 7. I think it's ultimately very much about, it is a horror. You know, she comes back to this town where like everything is like kind of supremely fucked up. Like I was just rereading this book for my past pages and I was like, these children are so mentally ill. I'm so sorry. Like I probably need to like go up at some point and like update the content warnings because I'm like, yeah, this is not like a cute, like lighthearted book. But I think you with all of that, even I think ultimately it is a book about healing, about connection, about the power of like getting to express yourself, about reunion, I think, with people that you've lost. It's very much about the people that you've known and that you've had and who are now sort of gone. But how that continues to echo within you, how that continues to affect you, and how that continues to give you strength, or haunt you at, you know, depending on who the person is. And it is, I think, ultimately a very hopeful book. I think that was really the core. of it while I was writing. Like, so it was like it is a horror book now. And I sort of lean into that. But it is ultimately something to me that's very much about like catharsis and healing and like refinding yourself and like being kind to yourself, I think, and to others, and the strength of sort of finding that community.
Yeah, I love that, and I love the themes that it has in within the story, and it just sounds so good and just so captivating, and
Thank you.
I really, really can't wait. And I mean, I feel like it's so funny too
It's a
that.
weird one to pitch sometimes because like I mean you're now like trope graphics are all the thing and like but it's kind of weird for me to like pitch such a heavy book because it does sort of deal with like suicide and like suicidal ideation and obviously like mental health. So it's not like a book that I feel comfortable like pitching in a very like cutesy way. I do really hope that it finds people and like never fear, like trope graphics are coming as so the marketing cycle ramps up, but also because it's not like it doesn't have a romance, which is also a really interesting thing to sort of navigate in YA and like with the current like marketing trends. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was something that not that I was expecting. Expecting, but that I didn't know. And then recently, on Valentine's Day, you had shared those snippets with the word, with love
Yeah.
within your book, and you had shared that there isn't a romance in it, and it also goes to show how you can then also really, really focus on the characters and really, really focus on them personally. And also, obviously, I can see how it would be awkward to pitch, as obviously you can't really pitch like, here's my book, it's super happy and fun, like enjoy. But
It's about getting the tone right, yeah.
right, exactly. And it will reach, I'm so sure it will reach so many readers who are excited to read it and who will need to read it and who want to read it and who they will be able to connect with. And also, you pitched it very well in your Instagram post on Valentine's Day with the when you
You.
said, this book is based on a play where German kids are so horny and repressed and two of them die.
So weird. What? Are you familiar with Spring Awakening?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess for anyone who's like not familiar, like just to contextualize that so it sounds like less deranged. It is a kind of like deranged inspiration because it is literally about like, kids who I can't really put it any better than like so horny and repressed that two of them die. Like that is literally the plot. But I mean Spring Awakening is ultimately about the repression of like expression and education. It's about kids not being able to get information about their own bodies and their own relationships that they need in order to safely navigate them. And that's how the adults and the system fails them. And that's ultimately what leads to their deaths in a way. And it was written, I mean, the original play by Frank Wedekind was written in 1903 or like I want to say, and then it became a Broadway musical obviously in 2006. I think it's just, I guess it's kind of sad. I mean it's very relevant, but it's sad that it's so relevant even sort of 100, 150 years later, that something from written in like a German small town in like the early 1900s is still so relevant, I think, especially I'm not American, but like a lot of the discourse that I see coming out of the US with like book bannings and abortion and all that, it's just so incredibly still relevant. And I think that ultimately a universal sort of themes and feelings and conversations that I resonated with and that I'm sort of still drawing on a little bit. And I think so, yeah, ultimately, even though that's the plot of the play. It is ultimately about relationships between people and being able to express those relationships in a safe way, despite like sort of growing up in a environment that doesn't let you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I love the music from the musical, and I'm a musical theater nerd. So this touched my
Yes.
soul,
My
and
people.
yeah, exactly, right. Well, other than the musical Spring Awakening, what sort of gave you the inspiration or the spark to write The Dark We Know?
I think Spring Awakening was definitely a big one. It was definitely sort of inspired by the last scene in, so I mean, the book was originally called Those You've Known. So it was inspired by that scene in the musical, where Melchior, after the said deaths of his girlfriend and his boyfriend, best friend, well, controversially, but girlfriend and best friend, sort of is saved from committing suicide by their ghosts. And it was very much inspired by that scene. It was very like, oh, you know, what happens with a boy who can see ghosts? Who's, you know, decided to continue on living, but like, what is the aftermath of that? And it's very much about grief, and you know, the book is about grief and the aftermath of that and how that continues to affect you. But I think I was also inspired very much, I mean, by, you know, personal circumstances. I think the book is various like feelings of loss, of sort of like isolation, especially during COVID, especially, you know, separated from a lot of my friends. But I guess a big media inspiration that I would have to shout out is, again, well, see, I'm failing again, but Andrew Joseph White. The Dog We Know is set in a religious small town context. It is sort of a main character who's sort of left that community, and it like part of that isolation is also grappling with that. That is sort of religious imagery. And I grew up religious, and I left when I was a teenager. It was kind of, I mean, it wasn't like an abusive situation. It was just, but it's always, I think, really hard to leave something so formative to you that your whole community and family is in. And the book originally wasn't about that, and then I read Hell Followed With Us by Andrew Joseph White in 2022, I want to say. I just sort of like devoured the whole thing, and there was a line or like a scene in the book where the main character is like trying really hard to pray and just hearing nothing back. And that really struck me. And I think that sort of unlocked how I wanted to talk about religion and my religious experiences for the first time. And then that sort of made it into the book. So yeah, I think that sort of really transformed the book in a very major way. I think the sort of groundwork was already there, but that sort of just opened it up. And I have told Andrew this recently. Yeah, so I think I will probably end up seeing this a few more times as I talk about this book in the next few months. But you're the first to hear it officially. So yeah, I think that's a big one. Spring Awakening, Hell Followed With Us, you know, a lot more like musical influences, especially that as I, you know, I was like, oh, actually that, you know, helps me write this book and inspire me to work on this book. But I think in terms of what helped me create the book, I think those two are probably big ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And two really wonderful pieces of media. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I love hearing that. And yeah, earlier when you had mentioned Hadestown and Spring Awakening and Seven by Taylor Swift, I was like, wow, banger after
Yeah, my entire essay
banger.
on how Spring Awakening and Hadestown are both about like, you know, change, seasons
Yeah.
representing change, and like, you know, leading people out to change. And you know, the book is about like a mining town. It's very it's, you know, there's like sort of underground imagery, there's a lot of like seasonal imagery. And I think, you know, Orpheus and Eurydice is always about the power of the gaze, about like looking, about like seeing. And like, you know, I always think about the gaze as like seeing, really seeing someone and like knowing someone, and seeing someone for who they are. So I think, and you know, obviously they both have sort of like folk influences in the soundtrack. So my sort of essay on Spring Awakening x Hadestown as a very natural fit. Yeah. And then I'm
Yeah.
always Taylor Swift is in everything I do. I mean, like,
Yeah. Well, I love that. And Once you had sort of this idea and you had these inspirations, what was writing the first draft like?
I have never been that productive again in my life. I wrote that first draft. I had sort of come home from uni during COVID isolation. I think I had just finished like my dissertation and like turned in all my final coursework. So I was like done with school basically. I was unemployed in the middle of COVID lockdown. I was just spending all day at home. I literally had like no purpose in life. I like literally nothing else to do. And I wrote like the first draft of like 70,000 words in like 4 weeks. It was crazy. It just sort of spilled out of me again at like 3 a.m. Like I spent like just consecutive like days and like nights just sort of vomiting out onto the paper. And it, yeah, I mean, I think that sort of told me that it was special. I mean, it's caused me a lot of problems later on. Like, obviously, like in the process of revising, I was like, why did I do this to myself? Like, get this book away from me. But I think that's natural. I think everyone has that. But I think just the fact that I got it out so fast and it came together so naturally, I think really told me that it was something that I needed to write for myself. I wasn't really thinking about like market at the time, which again caused some problems for me down the line in terms of figuring out, you know, genre and all that and where I wanted to, how to like position it. But it was really something that I needed to write for myself. And I think hopefully I think that heart still shows in the final product, that part of what I wanted to get out for myself. Yeah, so I think, you know, the first draft came out very quickly, and then I had a couple friends better read it. And then it went out to agents, I think. I don't know if I just didn't have the patience or I thought it was ready. But I think it came together very cleanly. So I think the version that I sent out to agents and that I got an offer on was like a draft, like 1.5, basically. Yeah.
Wow, which is really
It's changed
great.
a lot
And
since, but yeah, that was it was a solid first draft.
yeah, I mean, clearly, because I mean, wow, for that to be, like you said, draft like 1.5 and then to
Yeah.
hear back and
It was like a fever dream, like few months.
I'm sure. Well, that sort of leads me into my next question, which is how long until you heard from someone, sort of like from putting it out into the, void of
Yeah,
querying,
void of right
and
the
then he
trenches.
exactly, and then hearing back, sort of what was that timeline like?
Yeah, I mean, I'd already when I was writing The Dark Window, I was already querying another book. So I think I started querying that first book like January 2020, what year was that? 2021. And then I wrote The Dark Window in June. And I sent it out in July, end of July, because the first book sort of wasn't going anywhere. I had like some requests out, but I wasn't feeling it as much, and I didn't feel as optimistic about it. And I felt very strongly about The Dark Window, which sort of, you know, paid off, obviously. So I sent it out, and then I heard back in, I think my first offer was in mid-September. And then I signed with my agent in October. So it was really like I spent, I think, querying maybe 6 or 7 months on the first book, and then like a month and a half on The Dark Window. So I was in the trenches in total for like maybe 7 to 8 months, which obviously was not a great time for me. It was a very like this emotionally fraught time for me. I was like crying to my mom at one point, and I'm like, that's how you know it's bad, when I let go of my mom. Like, she didn't know anything about me querying. She was just
Oh,
like,
really?
I was just like crying to her about like being a failure.
Oh.
It was like one of those nights. But you know, it was definitely like not a fun time for me, but I'm also very aware that it's like not very long at all. I mean, The Dark Window, like especially with the current like querying climate, like a month and a half, I was very grateful for how quickly that sort of turned out. I had multiple offers. So yeah, I think I'm very aware of the fact that you should always validate, your emotions are always valid, But I think in the grand scheme of things, I'm very aware that that was a slightly above average experience, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's I love the advice to have, validating your emotions, and but you sort of got that sort of like long sort of trudging through the trenches period with your first book on submission, and then this like very quick turnaround for the second book you went on submission with, and so to have that contrast is sort of a nice balance to see, like, okay, wow, it can be very different and very wild. And even
I mean, so
hearing,
much luck is involved. Like, it always takes like one agent to get the rest of them like moving. The agent that ultimately first offered On the Dark We Know wasn't someone who had my previous book. So it's always just there's just so much luck involved in terms of who's reading what, who's open to submissions at the time. Who feels like reading fast that day. Sometimes a newer agent is reading faster. So I'm always very aware. I think there's always so much discourse about people who have like easy querying experiences versus people who have like, been in the trenches for a long time. But there's just so many factors involved. I think there's just so much like nuance to all these conversations that Twitter doesn't always capture in the best way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, knowing that, gosh, we're 6 months out from release,
Just it
or
six
about.
months as of like 5 days ago when I was recording. Yeah, when we're recording this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, wow. Well, knowing that it's getting closer and closer, what are you most excited for when The Dark We Know releases?
I think with something that I've learned in this process of publishing is to always separate my excitements into two categories. And one is the things that I can control, and one is the things that I can't. The things you can control are your goals. That's what you can realistically work towards, and the things that you can't are like your pipe dreams. You'll be thrilled if they exist. You obviously like hold a part in your heart that hopes they come true, but you shouldn't like hinge your emotions on them happening. Because, obviously if you're like, I'm excited to be a Reese book club pick and have all the book boxes in the world make me a special edition. Like that's just realistically not something you can control. Probably not going to happen. And it's not something that I'm going to hinge my sanity on. So I think what I am excited about that I can control, obviously people reading it, I hope it finds people. It's very exciting to finally have it out in the world as like a physical object thing that is real after like screaming, crying, throwing up over it for like 2 years. Not even kidding, like not even exaggerating. That's always, I think, the biggest surreal moment of like any publishing journey is to actually see it become this physical thing and have people reading it and have strangers like perceiving you. I think that's also the biggest fear, but that's also excitement for sure. I'm excited about getting to throw like a launch party with friends. Don't know what the plans are for that yet, but definitely looking forward to doing that. I think I always think that debut or like any publishing thing is as special as you make it for yourself. It's a very weird experience because most of us are doing our day job at the same time. You're doing your completely like, normal life at the same time. And it can feel very surreal to like have this like dream come true moment in the middle of like a random Tuesday. So I think it's always just about how special you can make it for yourself and like making sure you're celebrating yourself. So I'm definitely going to do that. I don't know how yet, but definitely, getting something together, having the books on hand. I think I'm excited about getting art out. I have like a couple of like art commissions that I want to do like a pre-order campaign with. I want to like have like there's some art pieces that I'm still sitting on that people haven't seen. That's always fun. I spend too much money on art commissions as well. But artists are truly like the backbone of like writing community. Like I'm so to show people that, and I'm always excited to get people's art. So I'm very that'll be very fun. Again, it's like I think what you make it for yourself. In terms of things that I can't control, I think I'm I would be thrilled if people did edits, if people did fan art, if people pulled out quotes. I think that's always the most special, like especially when it comes from young readers. I think adults on Goodreads and Twitter or whatever can do whatever they want. But ultimately, especially with a YA book, it's I think it's always like 10 times more special when it's someone from the intended demographic who resonates with the book and sees what you're trying to do because that's who you wrote it for. So yeah, I think I'm again not hinging my hopes in it, but I think that'll be really cool to see, and I would be very excited if anyone was inspired enough or like resonated enough with the book to create something of their own.
Absolutely. I love that answer. And I loved hearing both the, like you said, the things that you can control and the things that you can't, but that you hope for. And I mean, I can only imagine all of the excitement that is going to come from reading the book once it's published. And even the art you shared so far is so pretty. And also, like, another big milestone, is the cover that has yet to be revealed. And
Yeah,
that's,
which hopefully soon we have the cover. Everything is as always up to the whims of my publisher,
Of
but hopefully
course.
soon.
Yeah. And another aspect of art and another aspect of the book that is just gonna build on people's excitement, and it's gonna build on my excitement. I know that for sure.
Thank you. We
And
hope.
yeah, oh, absolutely. And yeah, but I loved all of those things, and I'm manifesting that all of it and more gets to happen. And
Thank you. Yeah, I
of
mean, I think
course.
I'm also excited for what comes afterwards. I think that's always the big one. You're excited about one book, but it's always about what happens afterwards. And I do know what's happening afterwards. I do have the next books. I do know what's happening with the next books. I can't share it.
Yeah.
But it's always, I'm very grateful for the fact that I know what's happening with the second book, even before the first one's published. I think not everyone has that experience, and it can be very anxiety inducing to be like, am I only gonna have this one thing, or like when am I going to be able to have the second one? Because you don't just want to have one book out. A lot of us are in this to have this as a career, right? And to do this for as long as they'll let us. So I am very excited about what comes next. It's a change. I'm going into adult, I'm going into historical fantasy, and that's all
Oh.
I can sort of say. Although like I've sort of like posted about it a little bit across the months on like Twitter and stuff as I was writing it. But yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, it is so true to, I'm sure, to have that sort of excitement and knowing of, what comes first and also what comes second. And well, that sounds so amazing and so exciting.
I'm very
And
excited to talk about
yeah.
it.
Oh my gosh.
Hopefully soon
Well,
as well. Like publishing
yeah.
is just such a waiting game. Like you're always just waiting on being able to do things, on waiting to get things, waiting to be able to talk about things. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was most important for you when writing this book?
I think one thing that I always came back to, and one thing that I always thought about, and one thing that I always like struggled a bit with as it went through like many rounds of revision, and like changed completely. Like I mean, the book that's going to be published is almost entirely different from the first draft that I wrote in June 2021. But I think the one thing that I always tried to keep was the heart of it. I wanted to keep what I was trying to say with it. I think even as I was building on it, even as I was layering it and like making it more complex, I wanted to be very clear about, I think, all those themes that I talked about, that it is a book about healing. It is a book that I would have wanted to read when I was 17 or 19. It is about the connection between these two main characters, which is not romantic. It, anyone is free to interpret. I think it's a very intense connection. It's like low-key trauma bonding, but it, maybe, but it is a very intense connection. And I think it does pull, especially because there it's a male and female character. I think a lot of people just make the very easy assumption that it is a romance, or will read romance very easily into it. And I don't think that's a wrong thing. I think you can very easily see the building blocks for a romance there if you want to. I won't like deny the interpretation, but it's not a romance on the page. That's not what the plot is about. And I just wanted it really to be about these two very traumatized kids, you know, being able to be kids and being able to be kids with each other and being able to re-find each other despite being so isolated for 2 years, and ultimately just really helping each other heal and, you know, heal themselves and sort of save each other, I think is the core of it that I was like pinning on the wall, like you know that Simpsons meme where it's like do it for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, that was just in my head. It was like these two, like the two of them, like do it for them. And like I was like crying over like revisions, and I was like do it for them. And like even though the plot like completely changed around them, I think that was ultimately what I stuck to. And that's, I think their scenes and their interactions are the parts of the book that changed the least in revisions.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna
Actually,
think
I
about that for
I've never thought about it before,
real.
like right this moment, but I feel like now I have to like edit the two of them into that meme and like put it up somewhere.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll do that myself. I'd be happy to take that
Oh,
in. But oh my gosh, totally. But no, also that's just so special. And yes, like you said, it can be up for interpretation, their connection romantically, but also just like the connection trauma can bring, but also just like, a really beautiful connection between two human beings. And that is,
yeah.
I think something that is less common in books, because romance novels are great. That's amazing. That's super fun. But there is a difference between a very like visible romantic connection on page and just a really beautiful human connection between two
Yeah.
characters or more than two characters. And so I'm very excited to read that, and I'm very excited that
Yeah.
you're sharing that in the story. And but that is what you did share, though, is such a nice sort of important theme to keep with you as you wrote it. And like you said, do it for them.
Exactly. And I think the them, I think the multiplicity, like you said, I think the connections between multiple characters. I think if anyone knows anything about Spring Awakening, it's about like, you know, it's about four of them. It's, you
Yeah.
know, that about the two people who are also well dead. But I think those relationships also the relationships with the two sort of dead friends also come through in very impactful and complicated ways. And there are like angsty teenage romance elements in there that sort of inform these relationships and complicated relationships. And I am excited about that. And I think the queer factor is also a thing that is, again, I think it's the conversation is always tricky because do you label a book as, you know, how do you label a book as queer? How do you talk about books queerness when it's not about queer romance? I feel like so often, like, you know, queer rep or like queer books just get regulated to whether or not like two characters of the same like gender kiss on page. And then if they don't kiss, people are like, well, is it really queer? You know? So
Yeah.
especially with like bi books, I think we have this discourse like every like 5 months on Twitter, people are like, someone like makes like an invalidating like a male female bi character relationship or something, and then like it, we could do the whole cycle again. Like Twitter just recycles discourse like every 5 months. But I think especially with this book, like both the main characters are bi, and they are like, you know, one of them is a girl, one of them is a boy, and it was something that I wanted to address. I think especially as because it's so it would be so easily read as a potential romance. It is literally in the book where it she sort of reflects that, they could be each other's easiest choices, because they're sort of the most like, you know, convenient or like easy assumption.
Yeah.
And you know, I never want to say that they couldn't be in a relationship, but I think that's always something that I wanted to express explicitly, that just because they are there and they are attracted to each other's gender, it doesn't make them automatically romantic. So I think
Right.
the complexity of it was that is something that I really enjoy
Yeah.
in these characters.
Absolutely. Well, if you could turn the Dark We Know into anything other than a TV show or a movie, what would that be?
I feel like you've just like cut out like half of people's dreams. You're like, no TV show, no movie, and that's like everyone's like first answer.
Right.
I can't even say a musical because obviously that's already done. Like, and I think they've done it so well that I can't like really go back to that. So I mean, what else? I guess I would have to say like a graphic novel. I think that would
Yeah.
be really cool because I think I write very visually. I always write with like the scenes in my head. I have like blocking in my head. I sort of have like camera angles in my head sometimes. It's very about like the colors and the atmosphere and like what that image feels like to me. So I think being able to see that visually would be like the coolest thing ever. I can't draw, so if I could, I always say that if I could draw and I could write, I would like be unstoppable. But no, I just pay other people to do commission art for me. So if someone would, make a graphic novel out of it, I think that would be the coolest thing ever. And that would be so crazy to see. I think, especially because the main character is an artist. So I would love to see something that's like that uses like different art styles to like denote different things and like bring out different emotions or like bring out different like supernatural elements. Like I think the Miles Morales like Spider-Man movies do really cool things with like mixing like art styles for like different characters or different worlds. So I think just getting like a blend of like art styles and something that's really stylistic would be so cool.
Absolutely. I mean, hey, you just pitched this to everyone. Any
Who
publishers like
can I pitch it to? I don't know
they
anything about pitching graphic novels.
right. But I mean, you gave them everything they needed. You're right. This is
Please, if
here's the
anyone's
story and
listening, yeah.
yeah. Oh my gosh. Exactly. If anyone is listening who's a graphic novel artist, you know what to do now. And that is so true though. Also, like having the power of writing and art. That's like wow. I
Yeah.
mean, that'd be amazing. But
I need to read
yeah.
more graphic novels. There's always so many that sound so good, but again, I just
Yeah.
can't keep up with as many as I want to. I have Monstrous by Marjorie Liu on my shelf.
Oh, okay.
Very
Yeah.
excited to get to that. Like a dark fantasy, I think horror sort of leaning
Yeah.
graphic novel. That's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, I will be patiently waiting for that graphic novel
Please,
adaptation.
I will also be reading. That's I'm changing my earlier answer. That's what I'm excited for on the
Yeah,
movie. So the Dark We
exactly.
Know, that's the one I
Right. See, because it's controllable in a way, and it's also like not in control. Like, it's just like
yeah,
that.
exactly.
You know what?
So I
It's,
can
yeah, I'm
no
patient. I can, yeah, I've got
wait.
time.
I can wait. I've done a lot of waiting. I can do more.
Exactly. Right. Well, what would your advice be to any aspiring authors?
Oh, I mean, this is always, I think, do your research. I think something that has been, that was so helpful for me, especially getting into the industry, and something that I've seen be so helpful when I help friends or when I talk to people. I did a mentorship, I mentored someone once, and I think an important part of that as well was just research on industry norms, on genre norms, on what different genres even are, on what different categories are, how to write your query letter, how to pitch your book. I think just the awareness of that, because you can talk about craft all you want, you can develop your craft, you can have the most interesting book, but if you don't actually know how the market works, I mean, I think that's valid, but I always say that, if you don't work with the market, you shouldn't necessarily expect the market to work with you. In a sense, I think just doing the research sort of already puts you in that top percentage of a slush pile. It's obviously not a guarantee, but just I think agents talk about if you have a like properly written query letter, if you have like industry norm word counts for your book, if you know what genre you're in, if you know your comp title, if you know how to position the book, you're aware of how this book functions as a product on the market, as horrible as that is to say. You are sort of already on the top of that pile because you would be so amazed at how much of a slush pile is just people who have not done that research or people who are just throwing it out there. And I think the most valuable thing you can really do is learn about, what you're getting yourself into. And yeah, it's not even just about, querying and pitching, but learning about the industry and how it operates, about, payment schedules, I think about the kind of money involved, the expectations involved. It's just, I think you will become very cynical very quickly. Even though you come into this very starry-eyed and you're like, this is my dream, this is my dream come true. But I think as with any industry, especially an arts industry, a passion-driven industry, there's a lot of realities that you will sort of quickly find out. And I think that's always really valuable. And I think the other valuable thing is just to take the time that you need to polish your book, polish your craft, and especially if you are on like writing Twitter or like writing communities, especially if you're a young writer, I think I always want to say that take the time that you need and don't feel pressured to hit milestones just because you see other people doing them. I think like, being online really flattens experiences. You see someone else getting that six-figure book deal or getting an agent, and you're like, I should be doing that now. But again, there's just so many factors involved. They could have been writing for 10 years at that point. They could have been querying like for like 5 years. They could have sold like five books before they got, the big splashy deal. I think rushing yourself is sort of the worst thing that you can do for yourself because that just leads to so much burnout. It leads to so much like unnecessary expectations on yourself. That you shouldn't have to feel while you are developing as a writer. And yeah, I think even though I mean, I am not like old, I'm very aware that I'm like considered a young writer, but I have friends who are like publishing as like students in college or like publishing just out of college. And I'm always like, what would have happened if I had just gotten to it a few years earlier? But I ultimately think that I had the time that I needed to develop as a writer to where I am now, to find my voice, to figure out what I wanted to write about, to have the maturity to deal with being a professional artist, I guess, and to deal with all the changes that come to that. Because once you turn something that you love and once you turn a hobby or a passion into a career, into a job, that like drastically changes your relationship to something that you loved. And I think being prepared to handle that is not something that I could necessarily have done, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So I have huge respect for people who can, but I always just say take your time and take the time that you need. Yeah.
Mic drop. Oh my, I mean, oh my God.
I have a lot of opinions.
No, that was such a fabulous answer that spoke to like my soul. And I mean, you have so much wisdom, and it was such an incredible answer. And just like all, the first part you shared about how like, all the little details can really pay off, doing your research and learning to present the best product that you can, and product is in manuscript and story, but also just not this there is this feeling I've heard from others that are like, oh wow, look at so and so is getting published so young, or they're, oh, do they only prioritize young authors? But there's no rush, there's no timeline. And and so thank you so much for sharing that
Yeah, I
wonderful
mean,
answer.
I always think about, I think RF Kuang said this, but she said a few times that she hopes that, eventually the Poppy War will be regarded as like her worst work. And I, that was really cool to hear, I think almost. I love the Poppy War, and obviously it, you know, launched her career in like such an incredible way. But I think just the mindset that you are always going to get better. And obviously not everyone has the opportunity to have the career and to have as many, you know, publishing chances as, you know, she it will definitely have. But I think just the idea that, you know, you don't have to start on, you know, you don't you, your debut doesn't have to be everything. You can take the time, you will get better, you will. Time is always going to be on your side, usually as a craft. But I do also think that the age question is valid, especially, you know, now we're in such a age of authors being expected to carry a lot of their own marketing, of, you know, book talk carrying so much of book marketing. I think there is some definite unfortunate advantages or prioritizations that publishing can give to young, or tech savvy or conventionally attractive, you know, authors. And I think that's an unfortunate question that I never want to devalue or invalidate when I'm also talking about, you know, take your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's really cool that you're doing this
Oh,
at your
thank you.
you're are you like a you're in high school,
Yeah,
I
I'm in my
think.
senior year.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, that's like I could never have done anything. I could never have put something together this,
Oh,
you
thank
know,
you.
coherently when I was in high school. So again, like
Thank
I think
you.
everyone does cool things at the age that they are prepared to do it. And I think that's just the general advice, you know, do it on your own timeline. And I think this
Yeah.
is really cool. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to have you, and I'm very fortunate with the school situation that I have to do this. But it's really, yeah, I feel very lucky to be able to talk with so many cool people and
Yeah, you
learn
have.
from so many cool people. So, yeah, but it's an honor to be talking with you, and
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you for having me.
of course. What would be your advice to your younger self?
To keep at it, I guess. I don't know if this is like an inverse of the take your time question, but I think because I sort of, like I said earlier, I sort of dropped off reading and writing for a while because I was so busy with school and it wasn't really, you know, something that I was actively chasing. But I think when I really refound, when I was in uni and I got back into theater, and that was sort of when I became like a theater kid and, you know, whatever. But that I think that was also the time where I realized that I could structure my life around art, and I could, you know, make this a core part of what I was doing and what, you know, make something that I was passionate about something that was a core part of my life. And then COVID happened and I got back into reading and writing. But I think I would have liked to tell my younger self that it's possible, that, you know, it's not like a pipe dream that like happens to other people, that like you can do it, and to sort of keep at it. I think just because it's so valuable to me now, I would have liked, I think, to have that, to have writing be a bigger part of my life, for that time where it wasn't. And to, yeah, to I think always value what I have and what I'm doing, and to value it as something that I've always done, and that is such an important part of how I express myself and how I think about, you know, how I sort of navigate the world. I always think about, you know, when publishing is the problematic thing that it is. It's always like, you know, if it's so problematic, why are you still doing this? But I think the answer is ultimately just it's something that I would have been doing anyway. It's something that I do regardless because I need to, because I want to. And so, like, you know, being able to get money from it, being able to make a career and, like, you know, make it a professional life thing is a bonus. So yeah, I think I would just tell my younger self that it's, you know, this thing that you are doing and that you are drawn to is important, and it is important for you. And it will continue to be important for you, and it will pay off for you, which is probably something that I would have wanted to hear.
What a fabulous answer. I Love that so much, and I absolutely loved all of your stories and all of your advice and everything you shared. And I just want to thank the
you.
iconic, magical, inspirational, talented Wenyi Li for joining me on the podcast. I had the
Thank
best
you for
time
having
talking with
me.
you. Of course, it was such an
Me
honor.
too. I've been like watching the clock in your background, like go
Oh.
like to past like 1 a.m. and I'm like, thank you for staying up for me.
Please, oh my gosh, it is such an honor. Oh my gosh, yeah, no, the honor is all mine. And I did not, I mean, the time like flew by. I don't know what happened,
Yeah, no, same.
but I had so much fun, and I'm so honored that you took the time to share your stories and share your advice. And just, yeah, thank you. It was so meaningful.
Thank you. This was such a great conversation.
Well, thank you. And where can the listeners find you?
You can find me, well, Twitter's kind of like dying, but it's not dead yet. So you can find me on general social media at wenyili underscore. And you can find me on my website at wenyiliwrites.com.
Wonderful.
And of
Well,
course, you can find me in the books on the shelves at some point,
yes,
hopefully.
absolutely. Yeah. Well, listeners, go find Wenyi on Instagram and Twitter if it's still alive when you get there, and
Hopefully.
her website, and yes, in bookstores soon. And do you have anything upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote?
Again, mind blanking. I mean, oh wait, yes, I do actually.
Yeah.
Besides the book, obviously, which is available for pre-orders and is available to add on Goodreads and anything that you add books on. I do have a short story that just came out, called What Becomes of Curious Minds. Yes, that is a Taylor Swift reference. But it is on Lightspeed Magazine. It is a Wonderland-inspired short story that sort of thinks about portal fantasy as diaspora, as displacement, as you know, it talks about portal storytelling, it talks about diaspora. So that is fun, and I wrote it a while ago, and it's finally coming out now. And I love short fiction, so it's exciting to finally have something to plug because I spend so much time on novels nowadays. But yeah, you can find a short story that just came out a couple of days ago.
I love that. Oh my
As
gosh.
of recording this, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And when this episode releases, it will have been out. And yes, listeners, go find that. And I will be super interested to read that and get to sample your writing before The Dark We Know is out in the world. And
Yeah, and you know,
yeah.
keep tuned for I there's so many things that I want to plug that I
Of
am not
course.
allowed to
Right. Yes, we'll just have to have you back on, and then you can talk
Yeah,
about it. Yeah,
definitely.
exactly.
Thank you. I would love to be back.
Yeah,
This time
well,
next year.
yeah, exactly. Of course, 12 a.m.
Definitely.
my time next
Yeah.
year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of Try Reading. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you'd like, you can write a review or rate the show. And you can follow Try Reading on Instagram and Threads at Try Reading Podcast. And you can find this show wherever you get your podcasts. And you can listen to new episodes every other Friday. As always, you can buy books by the Try Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Try Reading link tree below. And yes, of course, that includes Wenyi's debut, which I am so excited for, and you all should be too. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time to join me for episode 55 of Try Reading. I had the best time chatting with you.
I had such a great conversation. Thank you for the millionth time for taking your time to talk to me and have me on here.